Hello, everyone. Good afternoon.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Peggy.
Karen.
Okay, I see it's 11 o'clock, so I'm going to turn it over to Peggy.
It's 12 o'clock where I am. This time change. Anyhow, thank you everyone for joining us. This is our session three in the series. And I want to thank CNIA for sponsoring or for working with us to deliver these sessions, and as well for InfoWay and Cerner for sponsoring, as well as Jody and Phil at Saskatchewan Polytech. It's always good to have tech support. Jody knows how to do this, but it's always good to have tech support. So thanks, Phil. So today our session is, our presenters are Jillian Strudwick. And Jillian's an independent scientist at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, as well as assistant professor at the Institute of Health Policy and Management and Evaluation at the University of Toronto. And she's presenting on supporting the uptake of digital health and informatics competencies for Canadian nurse leaders. The second presenter is Lori Block. Lori's a PhD student at the School of Nursing at UBC, and she's going to present on nursing knowledge representation in standardized clinical terminologies. And then at the end, I'm going to present on progress on an essential clinical data set for Canada. Each presenter has 20 minutes, and so all the questions will be at the end. I encourage you to use the chat, and you can direct your questions to either Lori, Jillian, myself, or just direct them to all. I also want to let you know that we are taping this session, and the slides, as well as the tape sessions, will be available on the CNIA website and the CNA website as well, and possibly InfoWay website. Lynn and I are still kind of figuring out how to do that, but we hope to offer the slides there. I do say that if you're an informatician, though, working in Canada, you should be a CNIA member. That's my thing that I always say. Anyhow, we'll now turn it over to Jillian for the first presentation.
Thank you very much, Peggy. And I'm going to just take a moment here to bring up my slide and get it into the correct view. Then I'll take it away. Can I get a thumbs up from Peggy or Jody, who are on my screen, that, yep, audio visual is working perfect. So thank you very much to Lynn and Peggy and the CNIA for inviting me to present to you today on some ongoing work that some of you may have heard previously about, but there's been some new developments, and I'll share with you some of those today. So this is really about what Canadian nursing leaders need to know about informatics and digital health, and I'll share an update on what we've been doing. This is a team sport. Research is a team sport, and I will acknowledge the team members later on in the presentation. So I already described the purpose, which was to provide an overview on the work to date, which I will do in a moment. But first, let's begin with the digital health context here in Canada. So you've heard about it in the previous presentations over the last 2 months. You'll hear about it in future presentations. You're living it in your organization. So I won't belabor the work that you're doing now, but I'll bring up the fact that there's been a huge amount of work in the digital health and informatics space that's been accelerated as a result of the pandemic. For example, in the private industry with telehealth and the rise of virtual care, as well as using more sophisticated methods of data analysis like machine learning to support decision making as it relates to COVID-19. But do nurse leaders who are currently in influential roles, so those in senior nursing leadership positions, those with human resource and financial responsibilities, do they have the required competencies to meaningfully participate in decision making with regards to some of the activities already happening, like electronic health record system implementation or optimization, and other kinds of digital health technologies that we're beginning to see more prevalent in our work environment. And so this work was really to identify what are those core informatics competencies for nurse leaders that are relevant here to the Canadian context, and then to work towards disseminating those within our country. So go through three pieces of work. The first two have been completed, and the third piece of work is underway. And each of them I will describe. So the first piece of work is a scoping review, which is a type of literature review. And it was really done to identify, so what have others done? What other researchers have looked at this question and identified essentially a list of competencies for this user group or this group, nurse leaders. And so we asked a couple of questions. One was what nurse leader informatics competencies have been already identified? What frameworks or theories have been used in the development of these competencies? Then we were interested also in if there had been any instruments or self-assessment instruments or tools that had been developed. And the last question is looking at what those psychometric properties are of the identified instruments. And we used a specific kind of literature review methodology called a scoping review, I'm not going to go into great detail about that today, but if you're interested in the approach that was used, there is a publication that's available, open access, if you want to look at that. This work ended up being published in the Journal of Nursing Administration, which was a fit given that this is a journal that tends to be read by nursing leaders. So what did we find? Of the more than 1,000 articles, we ended up with 15 that looked at this particular topic, published anywhere from before the year 2000, so quite a long time ago, with a completely different technological context than we're in today, to more recently. Most of the work done was done in the U.S., and interestingly, the number of competencies that were identified range from a smaller number, say 10 to 25, to over 100. And so as you can imagine, those that had more than 100 competencies that they suggested that nurse leaders needed to acquire, those are very granular. And many of them we didn't find to be particularly meaningful for today's context. For example, one was like opening emails and things like that. So some of them were a bit outdated. So if we look at the findings further, they were, we categorized them into domains and themes. The domains are essentially, if you think about the definition of competency, so knowledge and skill, and then the competency themes related to data or information management, information systems, education, research, ethics, legal, regulatory, privacy, security, and impact. And then for informatics skills, there are requirements for system selection, implementation, analysis. And then we had this sort of catch-all sort of other category, which is more around some of the softer skills or non-specific skills to the informatics field. So we ended up with this long list of, as you can imagine, hundreds of competencies and said, okay, which ones are relevant to our space here in Canada. And that launched a second study, which is about doing just that. So we were able to combine a number of the competencies that were developed or on that list because they were redundant or they weren't relevant. And so we got down to about 26 that we used for this study. And I'll share with you a little bit about how we did this, but if you're interested in looking at the final list or the process of this work, it was published in the International Journal of Medical Informatics. I believe it was last year, but I don't see the date on this. I can confirm. So what a Delphi study is essentially consultations with experts through various rounds of engagement with these experts. So we started off with the 26 competency statements identified from the literature review. We then engaged these experts from across Canada on with regards to the wording or clarity, if there's any missing. And then we went through and prioritized the importance of the statements, eventually landing on a smaller number that were what we deemed relevant to the Canadian context. So who participated? It was quite variable in terms of we had participants who were experts in the field from different provinces, different age groups, various levels of years of experience specifically in the field, educational background. And also what was really interesting was the area of work. We had a number of different areas represented. In terms of the results, we were interested in looking at how people answered in terms of if they thought it was a priority in a couple of different rounds of engagement. So that determined whether we would include them in the final list of competencies. And what we ended up with was a list of 24 statements. And so I'm not going to read out all the statements. Happy to provide this. And as Peggy had mentioned, the deck is available for you, as well as the recording. And we're happy to send any supplementary materials your way as well. But I'll highlight a few. So on this page, you can see that one of the statements is nurse leaders demonstrate an awareness of the Canadian Association of Schools of Nursing entry to practice nursing informatics competencies for direct care nurses. So this is at a different level than say direct care nurses. And so that is that sort of level of where nurse leaders need to be is reflected in the competency statements. The competency statement that I want to highlight on this slide is specific to the work of the National Nursing Data Initiative and Symposium work. And so this is nurse leaders understand and demonstrate the use of data analytics and evidence-based decision-making. And I think that's some of the where we want to get to with a lot of the NNDS or National Nursing Data Initiative. I'm getting all the acronyms mixed up these days. We took out the symposium part. Peggy, I'm sure, will correct me later. And then the last slide here is that nurse leaders are advocating for and advancing the use of clinical and technical standards. And that's a whole conversation that I think Lori will be speaking about with specifically about the clinical side of that. So again, 24 statements, not reading them out, but happy to share them with you. So next steps. And so we've got a couple of the authors of these next steps on the line here today. And really the idea is to take those statements and create a self-assessment instrument so that a nurse leader can fill out the self-assessment and identify areas of strength, but also areas that could be further developed. And we're still looking for a home for where this might live. And we're still actually going through the instrument development side of things right now. But one of the things that we're thinking about is how eventually we would match up the areas of further development or weakness with resources that could support the acquisition of these competencies. And I think we'll have to get creative given the environment that we're currently in, but also because nurse leaders have time constraints and a number of competing priorities, and informatics and digital health is just one of them. So I won't go into a lot of detail, but what I can say is we're following an 8-step approach to the development of the instrument. The scoping review, the literature review, and the previous study where we engaged experts contributed to the first 4 steps of this work. And we're currently undergoing the remaining steps. We're in the pilot stage of the instrument, as well as achieved the ethics approval through the University of Alberta. So as I mentioned previously, research is a team sport, and a number of individuals have been part of the various pieces of work I've described. Many of them you probably know or have engaged with regards to this symposium and this work. And I'd like to acknowledge my own organization as well, the Center for Addiction and Mental Health for providing some in-kind contributions. And I thank you very much and look forward to your questions.
Sorry, I'm trying to unmute myself. Thanks very much, Jillian. And we'll now move on to our next presentation. And I'm reminding everyone, if you have questions or comments, please use the chat box at the bottom. We're gonna address the questions at the end, and you can address the questions to Jillian, Lori, or myself, or to all of us. So we'll, can you share the screen, Jillian, with Lori? And we'll move to the next session. Thank you so much,
Jillian. I think Lori should be able to do screen share.
Yep.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay. Thank you.
Lori, turn it over to you.
Hi. Hi, everyone. Can you see the screen now?
Yes, we can, Lori.
Excellent. Yes. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori Block. And I just want to thank the organizers for inviting me to share this presentation. It is very similar to one I did last year for the CNIA. But sometimes it's nice just to hear it again, hear this content again, because it is complex and new things have happened over the last year. So first of all, I'd like to do a land acknowledgement where I gratefully acknowledge that while I am at UBC, I study on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples, particularly the Musqueam First Nation. And here in British Columbia, I live in Delta, which is a suburb, and I gratefully acknowledge that here I live and play on the Coast Salish territories, which includes the Tsawwassen First Nation, the Musqueam First Nation, and other Coast Salish peoples. The objectives today is I want to introduce the idea of nursing knowledge representation, specifically thinking about or looking at SNOMED CT, ICMP, LOINC, the Physiological Assessment Panel, and CHOBIC. This particular work is framed within, and why I chose this content is because it's framed within this joint position statement from the CNA and the CNIA. And in this document, it includes four position statements, two of which are related to vocabulary standards that are meant to support the CNA's approach to digitally connected health. So what are vocabulary standards? Terms such as standardized clinical terminologies, controlled medical vocabularies, computerized ontologies, and ontologies are often used interchangeably when talking about the broad category of vocabulary standards. These vocabulary standards can be used to represent the identification and use of the rich clinical knowledge and its iterative manipulation to create computer-readable knowledge. It is this nuanced functionality, the computer-readable formats of knowledge, which are used to represent clinical knowledge, which underpins the topic of knowledge representation in nursing and biomedical informatics. And while there are many different philosophical and clinical views which explain nursing knowledge representation, I approach this topic with a perspective that the knowledge represented in these formats is most fundamentally a surrogate or reflection of nursing knowledge. Therefore, a question I ask myself over and over again when considering the representation of nursing knowledge as presented in and from vocabulary standards is, how good is that reflection? Like the apples depicted here, is that reflection of nursing knowledge something that is dressed up, but is actually something else, like the left photo? Is it a representation that is rudimentary or simplistic, like the photo in the middle? Or is it a clearly depicted reflection with known provenance, such as the right? And with that in mind, I'm going to look through the different types of vocabulary standards used in nursing and generally categorized as standardized clinical terminologies. But always, I want you to keep that critical question running through your mind. How good is nursing knowledge actually reflected in these terminologies? So across the world, researchers, clinicians, engineers come together to create lists of clinical terms which describe the knowledge of different or collective disciplines. Features of standardized clinical terminologies include clear concept definitions, attributes, synonyms, and define hierarchical relationships between the concepts, as well as they include a non-semantic, computer-readable code. They are often governed by international rules, As well, the specificity of the terminologies can range from high abstractions of reality, sometimes called upper level ontologies, through describing the reality of a clinical domain, such as ICMP, to expressing a conceptualization of a specific task for pointing a particular area of practice, called application ontologies. In nursing, there are several terminology lists which have been created to depict nursing knowledge. Most of these nursing terminologies have been mapped in full or in part to SNOMED CT. So if you want to, on your Zoom, there's a little emotion option. If you put your thumbs up, I want you to put your thumbs up if you've heard or used any of these terminologies in your practice. We have a few. Excellent, thank you for sharing. So the first terminology I'll cover or briefly talk about is SNOMED CT. This is the largest international multidisciplinary standardized clinical terminology. It includes more than 350,000 concepts and 150,000 synonyms. And SNOMED CT has a Canadian edition, and it contains concepts from the international release, but as well as Canadian specific concepts in French translation. So here is a screenshot of the browser. Now anyone can search on the internet for the SNOMED CT browser. And once you open up, I'm using the international edition, but you could open up the Canadian edition. You have a search bar, which is in the middle. I think if I move my mouse here, right here, and you can type in a particular concept to see what SNOMED CT has as a concept. Now I'm a wound clinician by trade, and so I wanted to know, is there a concept code for pressure injury, deep tissue pressure injury? And so I typed that in and I saw that there were six matches, and I clicked on the deep tissue pressure injury. And on the right, it opens up what the parents are. So in this context, it means that this concept is a descendant or is related to these concepts. In blue, it further describes as well, including the synonyms. So I can see with this fully specified name, pressure injury of deep tissue, I can see that there are synonyms. So these are some other options that this term goes by, as well as the code. On the left here, if you are searching, if you're interested, this is where we can further define or specify our search. So for example, I wanted just to see disorders, which are generally diagnoses, situations, and there's further content that we can display. But I just want to point this out to you. And this, to me, speaks somewhat to the complexity of these terminologies and why having not only knowledge of a terminology database, but a deep clinical knowledge is important. In about 2016, the phrase pressure ulcer was changed to pressure injury by the National Pressure Ulcery Advisory Panel. And that's an organization that helps guide the thinking and the education and the research related to pressure injuries. But many organizations still use the phrasing pressure ulcer. So I was interested, does SNOMED CT have a synonym or a relationship between pressure injury, deep tissue, or pressure ulcer, deep tissue? And here we can see that the pressure injury, deep tissue injury doesn't actually exist. However, there's a very close concept called deep pressure ulcer, and it has a different concept code. And so this is important to keep in mind that if anybody here is working on mapping or terminology work and relating it to a SNOMED code or frankly any terminology code, there is complexity and it's not something to easily dismiss. Leaving it there, because I could talk all day about that, I'm going to move on to the International Classification for Nursing Practice, or ICMP. This terminology is developed and distributed by the International Council of Nursing. As well, it includes nursing diagnosis, interventions, and outcomes. So if I was interested to look in ICMP for the concept of granulation tissue, I wouldn't find it, because granulation tissue is a finding or a pathology term. It's not a diagnosis. But if I wanted to look for pressure ulcer or pressure injury, I would feel comfortable or confident that I could find it in ICMP. It is recognized by the WHO as the terminology representing nursing practice internationally. And there are benefits to using ICMP, one of them being it increases nursing visibility. It is comprehensive and ever-evolving. It's available in 18 languages, including French and English, and it can be used in large-scale reporting of nursing practice internationally. Now, if you, again, are thinking about approaching ICMP and considering it for use, I'd recommend looking at these catalogs. So what these are international experts across the world have come together and said, what are really important concepts for nursing related to, for example, palliative care and dignified dying, or dementia care, or community nursing? And so it's a subset list of concepts related to this, these topic areas. And here's an example of the community nursing ICMP in practice. And you can see on the left, we have codes, and on the right, the translation or the concept. Now, ICMP and other terminologies, researchers do evaluate, and this one in particular I bring up because myself, Dr. Curry, Dr. Hardiker, and Dr. Strudwick asked the question, how good is the International Classification of Health Intervention, or ICHI, which is a newer terminology that the WHO has released. It goes along or closely related to ICD, which is for diagnosis. This one is for interventions. And we asked the question, how well is ICMP community interventions represented in this terminology? And while the coverage was okay, there were some gaps, including ICHI had no interventions specifically talking about death, dying, or palliative care. And so what we did in this work was we made recommendations to the WHO and the organizers of ICHI to add the content, because again, important for nursing to evaluate these terminologies and finding gaps or recommendations of change. Next, we'll move on to standardized assessments that have been codified. LOINC. Now, LOINC is actually a standardized clinical terminology on par to ICMP or SNOMED, but within LOINC, there are specific specialized assessments or panels. LOINC often calls these panels. Again, generally speaking, LOINC is designed really well for laboratory terminologies, health measurement, and observations. And so what the LOINC, I'll bring it here, the LOINC panel for nursing physiological assessment is again just a curated list of physiological assessments that nursing often is responsible for. So here's just again a screenshot of some of the content. On the right we see the concept, on the left we see the clinical code. And we also have CHOBIC. So CHOBIC, we had some great presentations on CHOBIC at the last meeting, so I won't go too deep into this, but just as a reminder, CHOBIC stands for the Canadian Health Outcomes for Better Information and Care, and it is a standardized assessment completed by nurses, and it's been designed to be used during patient admission and discharge, each including the same 24 questions. It has been designed and evaluated for the cross continuum of care, and this has been cross-mapped to both SNOMED CT and ICMP. And the benefits of using CHOBIC, meaning using it across the continuum or even within the same organization, same setting, is that it standardizes the assessment of patient-centered outcomes, it has nursing-sensitive data, and it allows nurses to compare the patient status between admission and discharge. So putting this all into perspective, SNOMED CT, LOINC and ICMP are those terminologies or standardized clinical terminologies, and they have overlap. So you can see in the light blue circle, LOINC and SNOMED have been cross-mapped, or they have a relation between concepts. ICD, I didn't really describe ICD too well, but it's the International Classification of Disease, and ICMP. You can see that most of ICMP has been cross-mapped to SNOMED CT, and those slices, which come down, So a slice of that LOINC is the LOINC Nursing Physiological Assessment that has been coded to LOINC, as well as CHOBIC is a standardized assessment that has been coded to both SNOMED CT and ICMP. So the benefits, why do we care? These standardized clinical terminologies are essential to support things like semantic interoperability, or that meaningful exchange of data, either within the same information system or amongst different information systems. It can be used in data analytics and used as building blocks for advanced programming, such as standardized clinical decision support, natural language processing, machine learning, and predictive analytics. But there are challenges. Now, this is a physician who's reflecting on ICD, but I feel that this is a good general representation of standardized clinical terminologies, is that we do have codes for many things, but there are many, many codes or many concepts that are still missing. And we really need to take that critical lens or critical eye and ask that question of what concepts are being represented and which are not. Here's an example as well of how we use these terminologies. Now, this is a report that was published a few years ago by the Canadian Patient Safety Institute, as well as CHI-HI. And here we noted the question of hospital harm. And here in this report, they say that hospital harm is likely underreported. If, for example, harm occurred and was recorded only in the nursing notes, it would not be captured, as CHI-HI coding standards stipulate that to be coded, diagnosis must be documented in a chart by a physician or primary care provider. And case in point, Ho et al. Demonstrated, so that's the article just on the bottom there, demonstrated that the use of the Discharge Abstract Database, or the DAD, again, largely a physician, nurse practitioner coded content, in Alberta, so this research was done in Alberta, underrepresented the prevalence of pressure injuries. And when compared to the documentation of nursing wound clinicians, it found that only 163 patients were coded for pressure injuries in the DAD versus 539 cases in these nursing clinician documents. Overall, that changed the prevalence from 0.4% to 1.4% in this population group. And even this was likely underreported because the wound clinicians were generally consulted for pressure injuries that were stage 3 or higher. And so they didn't even look at the nursing notes that might have identified pressure injuries stage 1 or stage 2. But not all is bleak. There are opportunities and movements to push these concepts and this work forward. And I'd recommend that if anyone's interested to stay in touch and to read the content available from these amazing groups, such as Canada Health InfoWay, CNIA, CASIN, Digital Health Canada, and internationally groups within IMEA. And again, just to point out that this work has been ongoing from the National Nursing Data Standards Symposium started in 2016 and ongoing, and I hope it continues. And that's me. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lori. That was great. Every time I hear it, I learn a bit more about what you're presenting or what your dissertation is on. So very, very interesting. So I'm hoping everyone can now see my screen.
Yes, we can, Peggy.
Okay, great. So today I'm going to talk about the progress on an essential clinical data set for Canada. And so I'm going to discuss basically the background to this work, the process for the identification of the essential clinical data set, the overview of some preliminary findings of a survey to key nursing leaders from across Canada, and talk about our next steps. So you can see that my slides are progressing. Okay.
No. So
you're not, you can't.
No. You can't, Peggy.
Oh, it said sharing is.
Can you put them on slideshow?
I thought I had them on slideshow, but I'll try. So I thought we had tested this and it worked. So I'm gonna escape. Sorry, everyone. And go back and play from start again. So you're sharing your screen. See if I'm gonna, I have two screens, so I'm unplugging one and seeing if that works. Okay. Jeez. Now my mouse isn't working.
Peggy, sometimes it helps if you share it, if you choose the program versus the screen, if you got double screens.
I'm just took out of the one screen now. How's that? Do you see my screen?
No, we're looking at your files. It's not in presentation mode.
Okay, it says you're sharing your screen.
The screen is being shared, but it's not showing up in presentation mode.
Go to the top left corner, Peggy. Say play from start.
Okay.
Underneath the home, the word home in the top left corner.
Okay, so now it won't let me escape. Oh my gosh. Okay. So home, okay.
Okay. Play from top. Let me start.
How come I don't see that?
Click the icon that's beneath the word home. Yeah, that one there. Yeah, no, the icon that's got the little white box with the green arrow in it. Click that.
I'm not sure. I don't really see what you see. That says paste on mine.
Oh.
So maybe stop screen sharing and then get in presenter mode and then start sharing. Try that.
Okay.
Sorry, I think Phil just had to step out to get a child to preschool, but he'll be back.
So if I hit presenter view.
Yeah.
But then you're going to see.
No, just start your presentation. So presentation mode.
Oh my gosh. Every time I have to go out of Zoom, I have to go back in to share my screen, right?
So do you see on your screen your there? Okay, you're coming back on.
What do you see now?
Well, we still will see your notes if you have any notes.
Yeah, I don't have any.
Oh, there. Okay. I think we're in.
Are you?
I don't know what you hit, but yeah, you're good now.
Okay, so now do you see back into this work?
Yeah. Yay.
Yep. Good job.
Breathe easy. Okay. So, out of the 2016 National Symposium, we established the working groups of the clinical practice, administration, education, research, and policy. And the clinical working group, which this work is focused on, is really was to identify the key concepts that can be collected across the system from primary care to long-term care, acute care and home care, and can be collected in a standardized way and mapped to LOINC or SNOMED TT. So this really links into what Lori said. I'm not gonna talk about, well, the admin group was focused on the leadership competencies, which Jillian's doing, but the education, research, and policy work, I'm not going to discuss those today. But for those of you who are interested, at the end of this show, I posted our webpage, and there's more information about the working group activities for those groups. We initially decided to focus on acute care. And the reason for that is many of you know the INTRI measures are collected in long-term care, home care, and mental health in many provinces across Canada, and that's increasing all the time. And so really what CEHOBIG did was trying to bring that standardization to acute care. And any of you that have worked in acute care probably recognize that there's very little standards used in admission assessments. So we decided to initially focus on acute care and then identify some existing standardized tools that are being utilized in organizations in Canada. We wanted to also focus on what we want from an EHR. And As we have essential clinical data, and we recognize that we need to build or layout assessments so that they are intuitive to clinicians. So for that systems approach, that we had to a visual flow of information. So by collecting data in a standardized way, we can create a visual flow. So we can look at Mr. Smith, who was admitted, and look at his ADL scores, his fatigue and dyspnea. And we can then look at that at discharge or halfway through his admission and begin to see, have we made improvements in his fatigue and dyspnea and ADL? And I think as well, when we think longitudinally to have an electronic health record, that we can begin to look at where was he on his last discharge. And if we had that information in home care in a standardized way, where was he in home care on admission to home care and discharge and admission to acute care, and begin to think about practice for nursing and having that information follow the patient journey. We also, by collecting standardized data, can create a report on clinical outcomes to be generated at discharge or transitions to support the sharing of information with the healthcare team and with patients. So by collecting information in a standardized way and coding that information, we can share that across sectors. And again, we have to begin to think about when patients have access to the information beyond physician and diagnostics, what information are they going to see from nursing about our documentation? And I think the other thing is anything that we do really needs to tell that patient's story. So while we tend to focus a lot on the standards and the science of nursing, we need to focus as well on the art about what nursing brings to that holistic practice for patient care. We need to, other considerations were that documentation about the patient needs to improve the communication to the whole team and the patient. And our group recognized the value of including therapeutic self-care. So therapeutic self-care was a tool that was developed at the University of Toronto by Dr. Diane Doran and Soraya Sidani, and we tested that in some work we did in Ontario. And it's 8 questions asking about, do you know about your meds? Do you know why you're taking them? Are you taking your meds? Do you know about your symptoms? Are you able to manage them? When you're discharged from hospital or home care, do you know who to call if you need help? And do you know who to call if you need it, if there's an emergency situation? So by asking that information, just think about that from acute care on admission and beginning to think about preparing that patient for discharge, it really added valuable information to better prepare that patient for discharge from acute care. And again, recognition of the value of standardized clinical data across the continuum. So what we did was we collected 5 assessments from across Canada, and we found that there was about 200 items being assessed on admission assessment. So, and there was consistency about what we were collecting. So, you know, vital signs, functional status, medications, and all that. I then did a quick survey with some nurse leaders across Canada and said, how long are nurses spending doing that admission assessment? And they said average 40 to 60 minutes are spent on the admission assessment alone. And we know from research done out of the US that Patty Stangstack reports that only 25% of data that nurses collect is of value. So I think that information really challenges us in that time to think, what are we assessing? Is it supporting our decision-making, clinical decision-making around patient care, or do we need to be collecting that information? We also found when we looked at clinical documentation systems versus manual, as well as manual, there's a lot of duplication in assessments specifically related to the skin assessment, and that they're often done in different places. A lot of information is collected that's just historical. There was an incident that happened and a question got asked to and added to the admission assessment. And even though we talk a lot about interprofessional practice, it's usually added to the nursing assessment. There was no consideration regarding the average length of stay of most patients and what we collect. Again, what information are we collected that is essential to patient care? And then every time you add something, it can add up to another click and requires the nurses to scroll through another screen, adding time. We also recognize that nutrition, while it's a dietary requirement, so you have to think about items individually. Nurses need to assess this, as in many smaller hospitals, there's not a full-time dietitian. Items such as social history, home environment, allergies, these things are attached to the patient. And though when we're building systems or creating electronic health records, that we need to pull this information forward to that admission assessment screen to reduce the burden of questions for both the nursing asking it and the patients as well. And that we probably don't need to include specific sections on past history, as this often comes up when we do the initial assessment. So here is got two screenshots of the assessments that we mapped out. As you can see, there's information on the demographics, general, the ADLs that are being asked by most sites in this no standardized way, but being asked again in each site. And then here's the allergies, dietary habits, chronic conditions was asked, and the mental health assessment. So we looked at the items that are being assessed, and we decided that we probably needed to do a survey to get some broader input. And we had initially planned, Lynn and I, to do this survey last, I guess it was in January, February, and then COVID hit. And we decided this fall that we needed to get some input and move this work along. And so we reached out to key people across Canada. And it ended up being a small group that we reached out to because we wanted to reach out to people that had an understanding of the need for standardization, of the focus on essential clinical data. And so that really limited the group that we reached out to. But we asked questions about background history, social history, cognitive status, symptoms, communication, ADL performance, risk screening, safety, and discharge readiness. So for each one, so for background history, we asked them, what is this information essential for planning and delivering care to an adult patient admitted to acute care? So is it essential? We really tried to stress that. And so you can see the responses here for time since it last admission, 80%, and it was a small group, I say 10 responses so far, that said, yes, that's important. So for diet, chronic conditions, mental health assessment, family history, infection history, you can see the responses there. And then as well, we got, like I said, we allowed them others so they could give us a response if there was other things that they thought needed to be asked. For social history, we asked again, what information is essential in planning for and delivering care to an adult patient admitted to acute care? So living arrangements, so you can see about employment status. Less important was exercise, frequency, hobbies, home environment, but certainly tobacco use and substance abuse, very important. The cognitive status, we ask about their cognitive skills for decision-making, acute changes in their mental health status. Less important seem to be memory recallability and periodic disorders. For symptoms, we asked, I haven't put all screens up there, but for symptoms, we asked about pain, intensity and frequency, dyspnea, fatigue, and for communication, we asked about, did the patient able to make themselves understood? What about the hearing, vision? Are those, again, essential items to ask for planning and delivering care for an adult patient? For ADL performance, we asked about bathing, walking, transferring to toilet, incontinence. For safety, we asked about with the ID band on, the allergy band on, call bell within reach. Are these essential for to be asked on an admission assessment? For risk screening, we asked about falls, history, the risk of falls, the presence of skin breakdown, the risk of skin breakdown, the risk of suicide. And then we asked as well about discharge readiness. At the end of the survey, we gave them the opportunity to provide other information that should be assessed or gathered upon admission. Again, thinking about, is this essential for planning and delivering care for patients? And they talked about the need for patient goals, the availability of caregivers who may not be substitute decision makers or POAs, baseline status and health goals for that patient, and then home care services prior to hospitalization. The other thing we asked about was, who is the best person to collect this information? So for each of those items, for background history, social history, cognitive status, symptoms, communication, ADL performance, risk screening, safety, and discharge readiness. So for each of the items within that, who should be collecting this? So no one, it's not necessary. Could this be collected by an admitting clerk? could this be collected by the registered nurse, practical nurse? Should it be a physician? Should it be a social worker, a physiotherapist, an occupational therapist, a discharge planner, respiratory or other? Really challenging people. Again, we're, you know, there's a lot of talk about interprofessional practice and what should nursing being assessed and what should others being assessed? So you can see for alcohol use that most people thought that nursing should be assessing this and for tobacco use and substance use. But for living arrangements, perhaps this is better collected by a social worker and employment status better collected by social worker. So how do we build the HR so that we make sure that that information is not always in the nursing part, but is collected by other providers? At the end, we wanted to know, are there any standardized tools that are being used to gather and assess the information? So we didn't ask that for background background history. There was some responses though. But for social history, the Canadian Nutrition Screening Scale was being used, and as well the CAGE. For cognitive status, again, I talk, and I don't know if any of you saw Lynn McNeely's first presentation, and she had a comic cartoon out there about, you know, we have a whole lot of standards, and what do? They create another standard. So for cognitive status, there was the mini mental status, the Montreal Cognitive Assessment Scale, the Cohen-Mansfield Agitation Inventory, the MoCA, and the mini MoCA. For symptoms, most people put the 0 to 10 or faces, or the C-Hobic scale, which is an inter-eye scale as well for nausea, fatigue, and dyspnea. For ADL performance, it was the C-Hobic or inter-eye scale. For risk screening for the Morse for falls and the Braden scale for skin breakdown. So there seems to be a standard there that we've all landed on. And then for safety, the Columbia Suicide Severity Rating Scale and the ISPATH WARM were the safety screens that were being used. So we get the sense that we can land on some standards that we can use and then begin to look at how they can be shared across the continuum of care. I think as nurses and nurse informaticians, we really have a role to advocate for cross-sector setting adoption of essential clinical data. And we know that patients move from one sector to the other, that it's no longer can we think about a person in acute care, a person in home care, that then we have to think about the patient journey from primary care to acute care, to home care, to long-term care. We really need to make sure that we're gathering the essential clinical data at that it's embedded as part of the usual workflow, not an additional process. That I believe nursing judgment should prevail. So when we think about an essential clinical data set, nurses then need to be able to decide based on the person they have in front of them, is there other information that needs to be assessed and documented because of this patient, just again, to support clear planning and decision-making. We need to focus on reducing the burden of assessment for both clinicians and patients. So anything that perhaps in the future has been asked at primary care, how do we pull that into acute care and not ask that patient that same information again, or even from acute care from eMERGE to the admitting unit? Assess and collect information that is really essential to patient care decisions. And I think as we think about the future, we need to consider designing for patient-entered data in the future and joint patient-provider collaboration. So if a patient is coming into hospital or they were on home care, and perhaps they could do a fatigue and dyspnea scale at home, we would have that data so that when they're admitted to acute care, we have information to look at to see, have they been maintaining at a certain level and what practice have been in place to help them do that? Or have they really deteriorated? What do we need to look at to better prepare patients when they're discharged from acute care or discharged from home care, or even to manage in the home setting? And I know Lori put this up, but I am as well. And if any of you want this, Lynn and I worked with the Canadian Nurses Association to create this infographic. It's available in English and French, and I can send that to you. But it really talks about we're data rich and information poor. And I think it's so true. So how do we share standardized comparable data to really support consistent communication among the healthcare team? How do we evaluate evidence from standardized clinical data to be able to look at a patient as they went from primary care, perhaps to home care, to acute care, to think about their functional status, their fatigue and their dyspnea and how that's changing and what practices we can put in place to help them better manage, especially when we're thinking of people with chronic illness. And then can we refine clinical practice decisions for continuous quality improvement based on our information that we have and collect data once and use it for multiple purposes? And I don't really think we've been so good at that in healthcare. Some data from CHI-HI says that we have over 2.7 million patients admitted to acute care. And then when we think about 200 data items, 40 to 60 minutes per patient, and the fact that 25% of our data is used. When we talk about quality and cost, I think we need to really think about those numbers and challenge us to think about what information we are having nurses assess and is it of value to planning for and delivering patient care. So our next steps, we would love to have more input into the survey. So if you or your organization is interested, if you send me an email, there's my email address, then I will send out the survey to you as well. If you want the infographic and you'd like to post that in your organization, please send that request to me and I will send that out. We also, as we said, we started with acute care, but we think and we know from our symposiums that we had home care and primary care that there's some of this item that could be should be collected in those sectors. So beginning to say, what could be collected in your sector? Is the inter-I used? Is there another measure? And then thinking about mapping that information so that we can share it across the continuum of care. Then getting some feedback and input from the clinical working group with the goal of having a final report available, and it'll probably be next year for sure, on our webpage on CNA's website. So that's the end of my session, and I'm going to go now to the chat. I might have to stop screen sharing maybe. And does anyone have questions or comments? I'll go to the chat first, and I don't see any questions in the chat. No questions, no comments.
There's questions in the chat. Kelly okay, make a comment.
Sorry, my mistake.
Yeah, I can definitely comment. Can you hear me? Looks like I'm showing up here.
Yep, go ahead.
So I just wanted to make one comment, Peggy, and thank you very much for your presentation and to everybody. So my first comment is we heard last session from the AHSO that they're sort of headed towards some of the grander visions in informatics, like semantic interoperability, like a connected care continuum, like these things sort of becoming standards as much as we can get there. And I think that the essential clinical data set, if we can agree on something, would be really, really important in realizing this vision.
I certainly agree with you. I just think, you know, Lynn and I have been at this for many years and trying to get people to begin to think about standardized data and that essential clinical data set. I know there's some work as vendors introduce their systems, and I don't know if Sonia's on the line and wants to talk about or say something about that, but really landing on the key information that we need to assess. And so I certainly agree that we need to get more uptake, I think, from nurse leaders across Canada about the value of this work and how we move forward on it. Sonia, I don't know.
I'm here. Yeah, absolutely. I think we've all over-designed our systems. And I think some of the evidence that you showed demonstrates that we're asking questions that, you know, don't really have that downstream value. And I think when we can start to quantify, so some of the work we did, and I see Sam is on the line from Island Health. So when we can quantify the value and the time back to nurses, and then we can actually measure ongoing, you know, what, you know, if perhaps we removed something and it should have been added, we can actually monitor what the nurses feel should be included and shouldn't be included. So if they're manually adding it, well, let's reevaluate. And if we've streamlined the documentation and we still see that there's certain questions that are never being answered, well, we need to reevaluate and streamline again. So, and I think it's when we can actually quantify those outcomes and say, here's the value we're giving back to nurses, because, or even just do the whole process of evaluating what nurses are charting. It was amazing when we did it at in PEI, where, you know, we had some of the nurses say, well, I have to ask these questions because PT looks at them and PT says, we don't even see that you've ever documented this. And it's amazing when you have those revelations where, you know, clinicians and nurses specifically feel very strongly they have to chart something. And then they realize that, you know, there isn't that downstream value of doing so.
And I think, as Leanne's pointed out there, that there's an issue of trust when data is collected by somebody else. And I think that that has to change. And when we have data standards, I think that will support that work rather than a narrative of data. But it's moving us all in that direction. I agree. I'm just moving forward to the questions.
Can I just jump in for a moment to that one? I think one of the things that we've been finding about the trust piece is that often our documentation is we have to get through it, and therefore when we're looking at documentation that is done by another professional, we look at it with a lens of we know that they're just trying to get through it. And I know this work is to go beyond that. So that the documentation is actually meaningful documentation and just what's needed. And so I think if we advance this space in general, we will get at some of that trust issue along the way.
I agree. I think you're right. A lot of times people are just trying to get that assessment completed or get that information done. Kelly here. Yeah.
Sorry, I was just going to add, when I have been out and talking with clinicians about this issue, one of the things that I frequently get back, and sometimes it's from the rehab professionals more than nursing, is that they have to duplicate their documentation because the regulatory body tells them that they have to document it themselves. And so maybe this is one of those things where we need to bring in regulators to either quash that and support the fact that interdisciplinary documentation is quite acceptable, and that they don't have to double document, and that if that's a wives' tale, let it be called that so that we can get beyond it.
I think you're right. I've heard that before about regulatory colleges, and I agree. I don't know how we can change that, but I think it's worth the discussion because it's important that if a nurse asks on admissions basic ADL questions, that physio will come in and build on that rather than starting from the beginning. And it is an issue that has to be addressed. I mean, I always say we all say patient-centered, but when it comes to what we're doing, I'm not sure that we're always that focused on what this means for patients.
Now, I'd just like to jump in for a sec, Peggy. I think, you know, Tim, you raise a good point, but I think, you know, this is the conversation I've had for two decades. And I hearken back to the days when I was a CIO, really looking at the pushback from some disciplines and saying, you know, we have to do this. Sorry, there is no discussion here. And when you really delved into the issue, it was more of a perception of needing to do it rather than something that was actually being dictated to the profession, whichever it might have been. But that came up over and over again. And over again, we were able to dispute that. But that's not to say that there isn't the need for a conversation with our regulatory bodies. I think that is a really important conversation. And even if we look at documentations across the country within our regulators, there's a lot of vagueness, but there's also some variability. So, you know, again, it's lining up everything to be consistent.
Okay. The next comment's from Kelly to everyone. How should we balance professional documentation standards with value and secondary use, narrative versus discrete? I'm going to put that out to her. Does anyone else have a comment about that?
Well, I think we've been talking about it a little bit anyways, and so maybe we don't need to address it directly, but the only thing, and I heard this from, I think it was Sonia. So the idea of downstream value. I don't get the sense that bedside nurses have a good sense of what the downstream value of their documentation is. Some of the language that surrounds that. So nurses document, but you look at health information professionals, that's data to them. It's data to the business. It's my data. So the nurse's personal and professional responsibility to document is one thing. And then the downstream value of that documentation is like totally separate. And I'm not sure how present and forward it is in nursing minds at the bedside.
So Kelly, I don't know if you were at the session the last time where Marion and Dorothy presented on the data that they had CEHOBIC and they were getting that data back to clinicians. And I really think that that's one way to start getting people engaged in thinking about the information they're putting in a chart is by creating reports and getting that information back to them at the unit level. And so they can begin to think about their practice and how what difference they're making in preparing patients for discharge if they use the therapeutic self-care. Because I agree, we need to get clinicians thinking about and valuing their data. And to me, that's a start with doing that. Is so much of what we have done in nursing has been buried in charts, and it really isn't available to us as a report to begin to think about practice, to think about changes on our unit. If we implemented a best practice guideline, how that's resulting in improved care and improved outcomes for our patients. So to me, from my perspective, we really need to focus, and that's the value to me of standardized data. We can code it, we can present it in a way that adds value to clinicians. I see the thumbs up, so I'm hoping that means good.
Sam, I just wanted to comment on what you've just said that makes me very happy and excited, but at the same time, I struggle. How do we get the clinicians to see the value in using the standardized languages and the standardized terminologies that drive those valuable data outcomes and show them the value of what they do? Because that's where I feel so deeply challenged is when I start talking about ICNP, their eyes glaze over, they don't care. And I want to find a way to help them to know and care.
I guess I would say, do they really need to know about ICNP? But do they need to know that we're collecting this data in a standardized format so that we can share it within our organization and eventually look at comparing it with other organizations? And I always say the value down the road is when we put out numbers and types of nurses in Canada, eventually to have some outcomes data to begin to link with that data. I think, that's just my thought. I think maybe having a high level knowledge of ICNP, but I think it's more like, here's why we're standing now, standardizing the way you collect this information so that we can share it, we can compare it, we can use it to begin to look at quality in our organization. That's my thoughts.
And I think it also, Sam, comes back to giving nurses something back in return for their effort that they're putting into documentation and demonstrating how it can have impact. And I think for more than three decades, we've asked nurses to capture data that they never necessarily see any return for. And I think nursing workload was probably a classic example of that. And so we have to get over that hurdle that it's just not the collection of data for the sake of data, but we need to, and this is where the nurse leader competencies come into play, and actually being able to put some outcomes data in front of staff so that they can actually see, look how we're performing on these particular outcome measures. And Peggy and I had the experience over the course of our time working on HOBIC within Ontario of actually starting to generate reports that could be shared with staff, either in staff meetings, post to the bulletin board, whatever. But that actually started to show, hey, you know what? It really is important that we're putting in good quality data. So it needs to have an output that they can value. And until they see something for that gain, it's just never going to resonate. And I don't think the language and understanding of ICNP or SNOMED or any of those things is as critical as that message and being able to, explicitly demonstrate that.
They also need to see it used.
Yeah,
they don't absolutely see it used, they don't believe that it's going to be.
Exactly.
And that's where I think that Jillian's work on and the leadership competencies, like Lynn said, are really so important. They need to see that they're being used by all levels of the organization, that my chief nurse is talking about how we're preparing patients for discharge. my nurse manager or director sees that we've really made a difference in better preparing our patients for discharge and managing their pain. And then nurses will see the value in that data. So from Barb to everyone, does the adult admission assessment drive subsequent assessments or intervention, or is nursing documentation beyond the adult admission assessment driven by the admitting diagnosis? Boy, I'm not sure I can answer that, Barb.
I think I'm being cheeky, actually. But what I'm trying to get at is that there is this narrative that one could derive in that nurses will complete the adult admission documentation based on either the paper form attributes or those attributes that are displayed in a screen, and they'll just go through them kind of sequentially. And then that's it. That form gets put away, never looked at it again. And then subsequent documentation or assessment interventions and documentation relating to care and what is needed by that patient in front of them, you know, is it in their mind what's going on, that here's your admission diagnosis from the doctor's order sheet, and here's all the orders from the doctor, and that's what the nurse starts focusing on? Or is there an interplay between the data that they're seeing, realizing in terms of outputs from the adult admission assessment and all of the other transactional documented requirements for that patient? It's a loaded question, as I say, I'm being cheeky.
But I think it relates to historical practice and you know, that thing, we need to get that admission assessment done, we need to get that done, and then I have to move on to the next thing. And I think it's because a lot of that information in that really didn't add value to their practice. And so maybe by honing in on having them assess information that adds value to their practice, that they can use that then to drive the plan of care. But before, it was just seen as something I had to get done, that's admission, get it done. And I really think that we need to change that culture and get them think about, this is data that is relevant to your practice. We have evidence that supports it, and that, you know, you need to use this information then to develop your plan of care.
It's Liz here. I think, you know, working with some of the vendors out there recently, and the whole notion of interprofessional documentation, I think taking that initial assessment that nursing does, we've been able to leverage technology to support that interprofessional collection of information, and then looking at care planning associated with that. So how does it tie back to the admission diagnosis or the problem list that's been identified? What other comorbidities have been picked up? Where it's worked really well for us is we've incorporated the admission assessment along with some fundamental corporate tools to assess patient status. So whether it's HOBIG or a falls risk assessment or other sort of patient safety initiatives, that really starts to drive sort of that next level of either intervention or care planning, along with loading various standards of care when a diagnosis is made, so that it appears on the nurse's work list or task list, and it starts to drive a standardized approach to managing those patients. The technology is really helping us to drive practice in a different way, and to really look at an outcome-based type of planning, as opposed to, I have an assessment I need to do, and if I don't do it, the next shift's going to get really upset with me. Sort of like that whole notion of, you know, I remember years ago, you know, nurses complaining because the day shift didn't do a bath for a patient. Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons potentially why that wasn't done. But I think if we start to think beyond sort of those paper pieces, and to your earlier presentation, Peggy, you know, what's the value of collecting this information? Who's the right person to collect this information? I think we can get a bit further than, you know, the issues and concerns that certain disciplines have around the must-haves. I must, because of my college, document this. No, you must assess this. And whether you're assessing a document that somebody else has done and then adding to that is a very different frame of reference than I have to do it all over again.
I think there's a nugget in there. If I might just add a comment, Peggy.
Sure, Barb.
I think the nugget or the pearl is, I'm just mindful of the provider. When they enter their orders, and I'll just use that as a historical beacon. When they enter their orders, whether it's on paper or in an EHR, they expect things to happen and the whole care team environment swings into action. When nurses and document, the transactional nature of their documentation is not necessarily taken up in the same way. Or, and I'll just say that out loud. It's my experience. And so if there is a way for us to be super clever in whatever EHR environment we're using, for our documentation to be more transactional so that the outputs are in front of us, and those outputs relate that have a value relationship to subsequent actions for the patients based on the patient's needs or contribution to care, are right there in front of them for the nurse to see in action, and that subsequent steps will be taken along the way, and that they'll the comeback to the nurse is then to continue on with the follow-up. So it's more getting that value relationship right in front of the nurse, not waiting for a report, if that makes sense.
It does, but I also say not the value to nurses, but perhaps if we document essential data in a standardized way, the value to the whole healthcare team, even physicians, because I think there's a lot of value in what the information that nurses assess, but it hasn't been really communicated in a way to the whole healthcare team.
Yes.
So the next comment is from Lynn McNeely, just saying great presentations, wondering if you're connected to the Ministries of Health. We've tried, and the Provincial Nursing Advisor Group, and we have met with them. In fact, next time we're going to have Michelle Acorn present on us our sessions. Then thank you. Keep up the great work. Lynn and I are planning to retire soon. We keep saying that we need someone to start taking this on. I think we've got Lori on track. All right, Lynn, am I? Let's just see where Kelly. Vendors creating documentation software have difficulty with continually evolving or even contradictory specifications from the user sites. Trying to standardize data standards is difficult when no one agrees what the standard is. I agree with that. I think Lynn and I've really tried to connect with the vendors that we know. So, you know, to try and get them to see the value of data standards. I also think that's one of the things that Jillian's work, I don't know if Jillian's still on, is the leadership competencies for leaders that are often at that table when the vendor decisions are made, being able to voice what we need, what is a value for nursing. And I don't always think that happens. And that's kind of what started to drive that leadership competency work as the chief nurse at our initial National Nursing Data Standards Symposium said to us, we're not really sure even sometimes what we should be asking the vendors, and then we get the system in place and we don't get what we thought we would get from the system. I don't know if Jillian or Lynn wants to add anything around the competencies related to that.
No, I think Peggy, you've said it. You know, it's really our work has spurred on this focus in developing our leadership capabilities in this whole area, because without their voices, and as Peggy said, we have met with the chief nursing officers from across the country where they exist. They don't see this as their role as advocating on our behalf for this type of adoption, but obviously they understand what we're trying to achieve. And I think this is a multi-pronged approach. I mean, we're tackling education, we're trying to get at basic nursing education to make sure that there's some focus on the importance of standards in basic nursing education. What does that mean? And again, we all teach documentation somewhat differently across the country in schools of nursing. We use different models of documentation. So we have a lot of, I think, housekeeping to do within our own shops, and that's both from the education and practice arena. And, you know, until we can get that wave of understanding and agreement that this is an important thing that needs to be achieved, then, I mean, we're going to continue to struggle, and Peggy and I may never retire.
So,
if I could just add, Peggy, because I see Tim Guest here, but regarding the certification for nursing informatics, we've been asking for it for a long time, and there's a real thirst for that. And so I just want to put a blurb out there to advocate for that, that really with digital health going the way it is now, we don't have a place to send people to get that knowledge and competency development. So I'm hoping CNA will reconsider.
So the next question is from Leanne to Jillian. Jillian, how do you think nurse leader competencies influence these documentation issues? Are you still on?
I think Jillian left and she puts another message later on, but I think that Lynn and you, Peggy, have both kind of addressed that. Thank you.
So from Lori Block to everyone, I wonder what our documentation systems have normalized by the lack of interoperability. The idea that we might not trust other documentation, I would argue, have a nuance of we need to ask it, chart it, because the form asks it of me, back to the idea of asking the patients the same questions over and over again. I mean, I think down the road when we think if we'll ever have that, I can look at the data from primary care when that patient's admitted to acute care, from home care when that patient's admitted to acute care, that nurses will begin to think about their data in a different way, again, about throughout the patient's journey and their documentation as well. So here's another comment, Ree Kelly's comment on understanding downstream value. Have nursing entry-level education programs adjusted over the years to include this? Oh, I don't know. Somewhat, I think, Lynn, right? Somewhat. So Jillian, she's logging off. Okay. So Leanne, Samantha, she talked about natural language processing for narrative text. I'm trying to focus on questions because we're getting short of time. We do not need to always be using discrete documentation. Agree that providing feedback about what they chart is crucial. From Helen Edwards, completely agree, Lynn, sharing the data and how it can be used to benefit them and their patients is key. So from Samantha to everyone, the session last week, so for those of you that did see it, PEI presented this template in their care plans from the CEHOBIC assessment about how they're using that data. And it was really a very powerful session. So those slides will be available. They're already, I think, on CNIA website. So I'm trying to scroll through quickly for questions. I think maybe that's got it. I think so. Any other questions or comments?
I think you covered it, Peggy. I just want to share a comment that was shared with me, is that Florence Nightingale never did retire, by the way.
Okay. Anyhow, so I guess that's it. I really want to thank our presenters, Jillian, who's not here, and Lori. Thank you, Lori. We need more people like Lori doing that type of work for nursing in Canada. We really do. And I want to let you know, you'll be getting an evaluation, whether you registered from CNI, you'll get it from them or else from me, because we really want your feedback. And you can even comment on my lack of technical issues around PowerPoint if you want. Our next session is not till November 25th. And we're having Michelle Acorn, who's the Provincial Chief Nursing Officer for Ontario. But she led the 2020 vision for nursing in Canada with the Provincial Chief Nursing Advisors. And she's going to present on that. And as well, Jennifer Rainier, who's from the Learning Health System Initiative at the Alliance for Healthier Communities. And Lynn and I had originally reached out to Rodney Burns, as we know him, and he's with the Alliance for Healthier Communities, because again, we tend to focus on acute care. And I know there's people here from home care and primary care, and we want to really shift our thinking beyond the sectors. And so Jennifer is going to talk about the comprehensive team-based data and understanding that client journey and identifying the gaps for improvement. So you'll be getting a link from me and or Jody over the next few weeks for that session. And once again, thanks for taking the time today. As always, it's always interesting to hear from other people. And like I said, I think we're all on the right track around how do we think about nursing and nursing documentation. We just need to get out there and challenge people around why we're doing what we're doing. Anyhow, thanks everyone.
Again, I just want to remind everybody, if you can take 2 seconds and just complete the evaluation form, they are being disseminated after each session. So it's helpful to us to get your feedback on as to the value of these sessions and perhaps what you'd like to see down the road. So thank you all.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good job, Peggy.